Welcome to Globally Speaking, a podcast dedicated to unlocking global understanding. Join us as we engage with experts and innovators who are reshaping the way we connect with global audiences. Whether seeking to refine your approach, wanting to expand your understanding of AI and its role in transcending global communication barriers, or just curious about the intricacies of global content, this podcast promises to enlighten and inspire.
I've never been told I can sing, I can play, and I just was told I can dance, and I don't think they were being honest with me. So it's...
No, actually, Dave, I have seen you dance in Nashville.
That's right, you did, actually.
And it was spectacular. And I'm not being sarcastic. It was very, very good. You look like you've been doing it for a long time.
I do remember. No, it was because of Rachel. She taught me how to dance. That was great. It was so much fun.
So let's start with some intros. Introduce ourselves, a little bit about our background, what we do, and I wouldn't say most importantly, although it is for me, how we met and how we connected, because I think we probably have our own twists to those stories. So Christopher, if you don't mind, why don't you kick us off with an intro?
So I am Christopher Otterberry. I am the Director of Commercial Learning and Development for Hyatt Hotels. I primarily oversee learning strategy and execution for the Americas, but a lot of the content that we create is for a global audience. So working really heavily with our subject matter experts around the globe to ensure that all of the training that we're creating is relevant for the field, also localized and translated so that it's relevant for all of our learners. And I know the two of you because you are both vendors that I've worked with to help us build our amazing proprietary sales training content, among many other things.
Among all the things.
Many other things.
Including dancing, apparently.
Yeah.
I'll follow that up here with my large microphone. Thank you, Christopher. My name is Dave Romero. I am the co-founder and president at Unbox Training and Technology. Been in the L&D space now about 25 years, and the grays are starting to show, you guys. I swear they are. I absolutely love being in this space. I actually started out in a biology major kind of fashion, turned wannabe teacher, turned out to be trainers can be real jobs too. And I absolutely love this kind of work. We get to work with global companies like Hyatt, and it's exciting to get to think about programs that can touch as many people as they do and make such an impact. So I feel like my goal in teaching people has turned into a very global opportunity to teach. And it's something that brings me joy every day.
Thanks, Dave. All right. Well, so I guess it's my turn. So I'm Lenny Grinberg, and I'm representing RWS here. I'm a vice president of sales for our North American content localization and content development teams. I have been with RWS for 8 years, but I've been focusing on content strategy, localization, and globalization of content pretty much my whole career, actually, for the last almost 14 years, straight out of college, a complete accident, but here I am. And I love this space because we get to work with some spectacular companies, but more importantly, some absolutely incredible individuals, both on the partner and the client side. But I think the thing I love most is the, opportunity we have to impact a global audience, right? Like everything that we do, and Chris, like you, everything you do, and Dave, like everything you do, is centered around this idea of content and building content and then making it accessible for a global audience. So I guess it's a pretty good opportunity for us to segue into how we met and then how this all kind of came together. So Chris, why don't you take the lead with your version of that story? Because I am interested in how it differs.
Sure. So I was invited to attend a corporate learning network event called CLO Exchange, which is essentially an organization that hosts these really great events where you as a learning leader get to go to this event and meet a bunch of vendors so that you can source people to help you build out the content or use their off-the-shelf existing content to enhance your learning programs. So last year, I knew that I wanted to build out a proprietary sales training program. I also knew that I had great limitations in terms of internal design. And so I went to this conference seeking out a vendor to help me build content. And that's when I met Dave. And I was introduced to Dave and Lacey, who is on the Unbox team as well. And the conversation was just really powerful. There was a lot of connection just in terms of like personality, same values. We just knew, like immediately I knew that I wanted to work with them. And not just because of their talent and the ability to create really meaningful and beautiful, innovative content, but we just knew that there would be like a really great working relationship there. And so we ended up sourcing Unbox to be our vendor to build out our proprietary sales training program. And because it's global, we knew that we would need translation and localization services. So I went back to another Corporate Learning Network event in the search for a vendor that could help with the localization and translation of that program. And that's when I met Lenny, and I was like, ooh, maybe I should go to a different company. because Lenny is so amazing, we ended up sourcing Unbox. And I thought that it would be a really powerful relationship if we connected Unbox into RWS. We knew that we'd be using RWS for other projects after we finished our sales training content. So why not make a triangle relationship, right? Where all of us benefit from the relationship with one another. So that's my story.
Okay. All right.
Lenny, you might have to comment here. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, you know, I don't know if I'm offended because, okay, well, actually, okay, let me save this. Dave, what is your version of it?
I could literally say ditto to what Christopher just said. So okay. My recollection of it was when we first met Christopher, when you go to these events and they're phenomenal for making connections, you run into a couple different types of people. You run into people who are truly there to make connections the way that Christopher was. You run into some people that are just learning to get information and maybe in the future utilize that. But one of the first things that impressed me about Christopher was that he was there on a mission, and it was a no BS kind of moment, right? It was like, can you do this? Is this what you do? I have a vibe with you. You have a vibe with me. It felt immediate. And I walked away from that going, man, this is just incredibly unusual. So we felt very fortunate from that opportunity to just to simply meet you. Then we got a chance to come out to Chicago and meet your extended team and everybody else. And it was magic. It was really incredible. Lenny has nothing to do with any of this, for what it's worth. But I'm sorry.
You're right. You're right.
And then I think, Lenny, the first time I met you, and my memory is horrible, but I do remember we were at a conference and I don't know what it was, man. It was an immediate connection. That to me, I've been doing this 25 years, 15 years at Unbox. I could count on one hand the number of times that's happened, and I wouldn't even need all fingers. So it's a really special thing when you get a chance to meet people like that.
Just to give you guys some perspective, I was 2 months into my leadership role, and I'm based out of New York, and I get an email about a conference that we've paid for that we have to be at in 2 days, and we've got nobody to go. Lenny, it's in Jersey City. Can you go? Now, I learned this a little bit later, but we as a sales organization, I think, didn't really hit the mark on our conference strategy previously. I get to the hotel and I walk upstairs and I'm like trying to get registered on the app. And I'm already, everything's a little bit like all over the place. And I'm trying to get on the Wi-Fi. And I think you guys will appreciate this story. I find the only staff member, what?
I said, be careful, because we were at a Hyatt hotel. So if you're going to say that the Wi-Fi was perfect,
it wasn't a Wi-Fi issue.
I was waiting for it.
The Wi-Fi was like 2 terabytes, and so we're good there. Good job, Hyatt. I was looking for the only staff member I could find, part of the Corporate Learning Network, and the one right in front of me was a young lady named Taylor Wiley, who I didn't know at the time, and maybe you guys didn't either. And I just remember just kind of in a haze saying, hey, sorry, like, how do I get on the Wi-Fi? And she just kind of looks at me and just says, the sign's right there. It was like one of the, and I'm like thinking, man, Wow, I didn't want to be here already. Now, yeah, I definitely don't want to be here.
Taylor.
Yeah. Love Taylor. Taylor. You're the one that got me into the CLO exchanges.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. No, I know. We're
Taylor. That's what we're
saying. Yeah, and Taylor will probably make her way back into this story that we're going to tell, because eventually she was part of the reason we all connected anyway. But so that's how I got to this conference. I'm already like, kind of like, why am I here? And then I sit in my little booth, and Christopher Otterberry comes and sits down with me. And we take one look at each other, and we're just like, we're going to be really good friends. And so, and from that moment, I was like, you know what, maybe this isn't such a bad conference after all. And then we saw some great success from the connections that we made at that conference. And I had helped to build a business case to get us going to more. And Christopher and I continued to stay in touch. And so, Dave, this is where maybe you don't know this part, but when the time came and Christopher said, hey, I might have a project, do you work with Unbox? Have you done any work? I didn't know who you guys were, and I didn't know if we did any work with you, but I said to Christopher, yeah, I know those guys really well. Like, as I'm Googling it. Now, luckily, what I didn't know is that Brian on my team met Unboxed twice.
Yeah.
And so I could see all that in our CRM. And so luckily, like, I was hedging my bets a little bit, right? I was like, oh, well, if you don't work with them already, well, you know. And then, Dave, I met you at the CLO Exchange in San Diego. Right. And that's when we kind of brought everything together. And we were like, we need to work really hard for Christopher and the Hyatt team. So
yeah.
So that's my story. Okay. So now that the world knows how we met and just how in love we are with one another, let's go on to some of the important points that we're going to talk about today, which I think is going to be centered around content. And it's going to be, you know, we want to have a conversation around all the different aspects of the content in our world that we call life cycle, from content creation, ideation, to actually creation and publication and localization and globalization. Wow, there's a lot of Asians in there. But I think we're all involved on some scale in each respective part of that content life cycle. And I think it's safe to say that we all have our own challenges with those respective parts. And we all have our own different approaches and solutions. And I think we've got some stories to tell for the folks that are listening. So with that said, maybe we start with the role that content plays in our respective worlds. And since I made you guys go first, I'll kick this one off. So everything that we do is centered around content. And I kind of, in my efforts to simplify the question that I constantly get, what do you do? Tell me what you do for work. And I have to say localization, and folks like, what is that? So I've kind of pivoted to say anything that has to do with taking content and making it accessible to a global audience. So, you know, the role that content plays in our world is it is basically every facet of what we do as an organization, whether it's content management with content management solutions, global content development, maybe it's for creative marketing or learning and development, coming at the creation piece from a global perspective to ensure that it's inclusive and accessible. And then finally, of course, localizing and translating that content. So that is the role that content plays for me in my personal and professional life. Dave, what about you? What role does content play for you?
Content is everything for Unboxed. So we are creators of custom training experiences, and content is everything from workshops to, you know, e-learning to VR. We're creating now AI-driven content with role play scenarios where you're interacting with an AI bot as a customer, and it's everything we do. So I see technology, while that's a significant part of our business, it's purely there to serve the best content up in the right ways and create the right experiences. It's never technology for the sake of it. So everything, literally everything we do is content. And to the point you were making, Lenny, content is one of those things where you really have to know your audience and your constraints at the same time. especially on a global level. You know, there's a belief that some companies have that you can build it for the US and just repurpose it in other areas, and it just never works that way. And so for us, knowing the audience, knowing who is going to be using it, knowing some of those constraints, the sacred cows, all the things that go into it, that's when content gets fun. There's not a lot of joy in creating one size fits none content experiences for people.
Thanks, Dave. Chris, what about you?
I mean, for me and my role, I think that content is a delivery method. It's the way that we give a story to a learner. It's the way that we present concepts, that we give them the key skills that they need to be successful in their role. And then all of the different modalities of the content matter, right? Like, how are we actually presenting this content? Is it video? Is it self-guided micro modules? Is it virtual instructor-led training? Is it instructor-led training? Is it a combination of all of those things within one program to really drive different methods for retention? For me, content is king. It's literally the basis of everything that we're doing. So content is wildly important, and finding the proper partners to work with to develop that content is really, really important. Having a vision of content is one thing. Seeing that vision come to life is something entirely different. So I think that content and the people that you work with to develop that content are really the basis, the foundation of your strategy.
Yeah, I don't know if you see it this way too, Christopher, but to me, it feels like a recipe. When you're creating a great learning experience, you know, I think of it like a chocolate chip cookie. You know, you've got your chocolate chips and your flour and your sugar and your salt. Too much of one thing never creates the right outcome, and you have to be very selective. But it is really tempting to want to do everything e-learning or everything in person or something. And the best scenarios are the ones where you add just the right amounts of every little thing and create this awesome outcome with it. So yeah, that's how I see it.
Same.
I like the analogy. I'm a little bit hungry, and some people would argue that more chocolate might actually be okay.
And that could be depending on the company, the country, the team.
Right.
It's like we rehearsed it, but we didn't.
We did
Everyone
not.
Should know that we did not rehearse this.
No.
So what are some of the things that we kind of have to deal with in our respective worlds when it comes to the processes that we go through to create good content? And I know that might be a loaded question, so I'll start, because I think we could probably take this a million different directions, but and maybe this will give us an opportunity to talk a little bit about challenges around those same processes.
Yeah.
And so I'll start, because one of the things that I've been working very hard to do in the last year with my team and our learning and development, the L&D function of our organization and what we're trying to provide, is frankly to convince people in the market that they really need to be bringing the idea of localization further upstream into the process. It's one of the things that has plagued our industry for a very long time. Shameless plug, I recorded a podcast for ATD a couple years ago called Don't Make Localization an Afterthought, because it is constantly an afterthought. And when it's an afterthought, what ends up happening, Dave, to your point, is US-based instructional designers are creating content for US-based stakeholders. And then once that's all done, someone says, oh, wait a minute, we've got stakeholders in 15 different countries. Can you please go and translate this? And I've always said, if that's the conversation we're having, we're too late, right? Yeah. Of course, we can take the content and do our best to translate it, but it's not going to hit the mark. We're probably going to have to rework it. It's a cycle time issue. It's a budgetary issue. So we've almost had like this responsibility to convince the stakeholders in the market. And Chris, I'll use you as an example, not that you needed much convincing, because clearly you understood the importance and a handful of organizations do today, but I'd still say not enough. Bring localization into just the conversation early, because if we're not there, it's too late and it's going to be a challenge.
I appreciate you saying that I knew that and that I exercised bringing you guys in early, but I think that that's kind but inaccurate. I think that I had to learn that sort of the hard way. We brought in RWS to help with localization and translation at almost the end of our build out of our sales training program. And because of that, the timelines that I was pushing for, which were wildly aggressive already, ended up being delayed because there were so many things that I didn't take into consideration about localization. And I'm happy that they were delayed because it gave us more of an opportunity to build out meaningful content that was meaningful to the learner, regardless of where they are around the globe. So I appreciate that you said that I was already aware of that, but I learned that through this project. And it's really informed the way that we build our design process moving forward. So as we're building out content, when we're going through that discovery on the front end, we're not only bringing in our subject matter experts to help us develop the content, but we want to bring in someone to assist us with the localization. What are we not considering for our global learner that we should be considering? And I think that that's just going to make us better as we develop our content moving forward.
So Dave, before you do your bit, Christopher, I appreciate that you appreciate what I said, but, and this is, it's really important that you hear this. You're totally right. And I do appreciate you being transparent about it. However, and you might think this is crazy, even by you connecting RWS with Unbox is already, you are miles ahead of what some of the biggest organizations in the world are doing. So even though you recognize that it could have been even earlier, you still did it earlier than most of the brands that you know and love and use today, because it's still an afterthought.
Thank you for the context, Lenny.
You got it.
Appreciate it.
Dave, tell us a little bit about some of the processes and the challenges that you deal with in the context of what we're talking about.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing for us is, and I kind of mentioned this a minute ago, it really is about knowing constraints, and there's always constraints. You know, timeline is obviously the constraint that everyone is up against. budget, I think you can easily say that that's one that everyone deals with. But then there's some really interesting ones that are, they're kind of like, You've got to suss them out and really figure them out. There's things like this one person in the company believes it needs to be a certain way, or we've always done it this way, and this one person invented it. And if we do something different, it'll really offend them. And so you kind of get into these really strange, but very predictable in some ways, sacred cows or sort of like secret things. We, you know, call them the landmines that you might step on. You just don't see them walking in. So you always expect budget. You always expect timelines. You always expect that there's some sort of urgency or need or some sort of, you know, problem statement, an ROI or some sort of sales issue or whatever. But it's those other things. And so I really find it helpful to get to know the team and truly listen. And one of the coolest things I can say, well, with you, Christopher, in particular, is you brought a very cross-functional team together, one of our first meetings. And what I listen for in there are people who say, yeah, but that's not going to work. And as soon as you hear things like that, instead of saying, well, let's find a way to make it work, it's like, okay, well, tell me, why isn't it going to work? And then they'll tell you, and then you say, okay, great. Thank you for sharing that. And let's see if we can incorporate that into our strategy moving forward. And it might mean we have to convince people of a better way. It might mean we have to acknowledge that that's a constraint and we just have to work around it or maybe embrace it. So those are some of my favorite things when we start to get into content, because at the end of the day, if you're good at what you do, it's like calling over a plumber to your house who has a toolkit, right? And he pulls out the wrench and the screwdriver and the hammer and all of those things. Well, we can all use those things really well. But at the end of the day, if I don't know what in the world the problems are, I can't see inside the wall, then I'm going to end up being called back over and over or eventually fired. And nobody wants to be in that situation. So I love getting to the root cause and listening to people and letting us tell you what's inside the wall. Don't bang here. Don't hit that. And that's the best part of building content in my mind.
Dave, thank you for assuming I know how to use tools. That's so very nice.
You can use a screwdriver as a hammer, Christopher. I do that a lot, by the way.
I'm sure I would. Just I'm sure. Yeah, 100%. And Dave, I love that you called out stakeholder management, because I think that that's something that is so often forgotten when you're building out content. Like, at the end of the day, the stakeholders are the one that requested the content. They're the ones that are going to be really plugged into the performance of the content. So you got to make sure that they're plugged into the development of the content.
Right.
And I think I've made a lot of mistakes in my career of thinking, well, I'm working with the subject matter experts that report to them. So obviously this is exactly what they're looking for. And then having to go back at the end of the project to completely redo a lot of the key stuff that we built. So I think bringing in your stakeholders and really managing those expectations from the beginning is necessary.
Yeah. And identifying, like, where are they in the spectrum of, like, both power in the company, influence essentially, and then how much they care about the outcome, right? And mapping them and trying to say, all right, here's how I involve them. This is how much I communicate with them. This is what I run past them. And that's really important.
Agree.
And I think it's also important to kind of tie it back out loud for, you know, the folks that are listening, that everything that you've just described does not happen if you don't have those relationships and you haven't built that trust and credibility with the partners that you're bringing in, right? Because, again, for us in our world, we're only just starting to see that the shift in the mentality of stakeholders around the importance of localization. But, you know, not too long ago, we never had a seat at the table and we were never a partner. We were just a vendor that you throw stuff over the fence to, and then we get yelled at when the deliverable is not, you know, what it needs to be. So I think, again, it's important for us to call out the importance of the relationships that we go out and build, because that is all, you know, conducive to, or that is all incidental to a successful partnership. That's where everything wins.
I think that any company that is going to spend the amount of time that it takes to RFP a project, to decide on a vendor, to move forward with that vendor, to then go through building content, et cetera, if you don't create a relationship that is meaningful with them, like, why are you even pursuing the project? Like, to me, I think of vendors, I think of contractors as colleagues. I think of them as people that work for Hyatt. So, like, I want to have the same relationship that I would have with them that I would have with an internal colleague. I want them to understand the values and purpose of our company so that those show up in the content that they're helping me create. Like, I think that relationships and nurturing relationships is one of the most difficult, but one of the most exciting things that we get to do in this space. And it shows in the content. It shows in the end result of what you're co-creating.
And that's, again, what makes you so incredibly unique. Again, rarely do we have partnerships like that. But when we do, that's when the best work gets created. And those partnerships are messy. And I say this all the time. I will at some point disappoint you, despite not wanting to, despite something that I could have probably avoided. It's not about trying to avoid disappointment on either side. It's about how you manage through it.
Yeah.
And if you can do that, you're stronger for it every time. And by the time you're in year two or year three, you're reading each other's minds.
Yep.
And suddenly it's like you pick up the phone, hey, I need help. Okay, I got you. And you can count on that person. We use vendors here all the time and love working with Lenny and team. But it's about being able to pick up the phone and say, hey, we got a problem.
Yep.
Or, hey, we need to fix this. And then having that other person on the other line go, I got you. And that's whether it's a colleague that's on a W-2 or that's a vendor partner, whoever it is, it doesn't matter. That's who I look for and who I love to work with.
I love that, Dave.
And I'll echo that, because if I've learned anything from 11 years of marriage is that I'm a constant disappointment. So you can count on
God
me
bless you.
For that. So let's take it to kind of a broader level for the folks that are tuning in. Right. The theme is learning and development. We're talking about content and kind of all the facets of the content lifecycle. Let's gear a little bit more towards learning and development as a whole. What are some of the trends that you would say you're starting to see work their way into how you're thinking about creating content? What is important for your stakeholders? And how are you thinking about addressing those needs?
Yeah, I can kick off here. there is such a growing need to develop content at pace now, at a pace that's, I think for most companies, unsustainable and really difficult, because over the years, budgets have obviously shifted. Post-pandemic, there was a little bit of a resurgence, but then now that AI has come along and created the ability to create content very quickly, I kind of call it right now, we're in the conundrum of good enough. And you hear of good enough all the time now. And that's partially, you know, due to tools that are out there that are off the shelf that you can click a few buttons, add some special words to, and suddenly the content is spit out and it checks the box. And so there's a big trend right now of just simply checking boxes and getting content out the door, which sort of creates this this alternate problem, which the big challenge that I see right now is the what I refer to the field of dreams conundrum. You know, if you build it, they will come. And we know that's not true. If you build the content and you just stick it out there and you hope that people come and show up and they better themselves for it, it's never going to happen. It never works that way. We're busy. We have other problems. We have other challenges, and the learning never takes place. So the thing that I see as the big trend right now is a desire to just push content out. There's content libraries. There's off-the-shelf content. It's almost like we're swimming in so much content that we don't know what to do with it. And those people who kind of slow down a little and say, but yeah, what is the problem we're trying to solve here? What is the real outcome we're trying to drive for? Those people are being much smarter with their use of time and resources and money, and not falling into the trap of believing more is better. And just because AI built it and it's fast and cheap, it doesn't necessarily make it better.
I think the biggest thing that I'm noticing is the necessity for personalized learning paths. I think that after the pandemic, job descriptions are I don't want to say irrelevant, but often a role is doing so much more outside of its job description than it was prior. So it's hard to say, oh, you're a coordinator. This is exactly your responsibilities. These are the exact skills that you need to perform. Because in one hotel, that may be true. But in another hotel, they may be doing three other things outside of that role. So they need three additional skills or 15 additional skills that they wouldn't need just for their coordinator role. So how do we personalize a learning path based on what they are actually doing in their day-to-day? How can we leverage AI to help us determine what those learning paths would be to better personalize it? How do we create learning libraries that are not like the ones that Dave are referring to, where they're oversaturated with just a ton of material, but ones that are very targeted to the needs of the learner? I think that for me, it's always going to be about advocating for the learner experience, and what they're actually getting out of the training so that we're really driving that engagement. And I think that the trends that we're seeing of AI, of skill mapping, of personalization is moving more towards being learner focused yes. and not content facilitator focused. And that's exciting, but it's also a really big shift to get stakeholders on board with. Because when you say to a stakeholder, we're training for skills, not for role, they're like, wait, what does that even mean? Why would we be training skills and not role-based training? So there's a big change management curve around all of this. I mean, change is just constant right now. So I think that we're all accustomed to that.
Yeah, and keeping up with it.
Sort of thing. Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Like, right. That's the thing. Every time you turn around, you're like, wait, there's another tool. There's another widget. There's another thing. There's another statement. And the pressure that puts on not only the L&D team that's out there, but on the learner themselves, because there's so many different ways to learn. And I actually, what you just said clicked for me too. I feel like the personalized learning, if you remember, it's probably about 4 or 5 years ago, we started talking about culture of learning. Learning in the flow of work was just prior to that. We had this kind of these different statements around that. And what's clear to me is that we were probably too early at that stage to really embrace it. And now with tech, you have more and more expectation that creating a culture of learning and a personalized learning journey is table stakes. And that while the technology is there, you still have this antiquated view of how it should be. And a lot of that just comes from being comfortable with how it's been. So I love when you said change management and the change curve. We're in different places. Every company's in a different place and every practitioner's in a different place, but there's one universal truth, which is there's a ton of change.
Yeah.
And it's affecting everybody in big ways right now.
Yeah, agree.
So obviously we weren't going to go this conversation without mentioning AI. I'm surprised with how late into our discussion.
I mean, it took us like 30 minutes, right?
Or 20 minutes. Right. I'm curious to understand, and Dave, maybe you can kind of lead this one. How are you leveraging AI? What kind of conversations are you having? How are you educating some of your external stakeholders and customers on the, like, how they should be leveraging AI and how you intend to do it on, you know, on their behalf to streamline processes?
There's a lot of good with AI, and I'm pretty biased here just because I think there's a tremendous amount of shift and change that's happening as a result of it. And it's affecting not only the way we go to market and talk about it from a business standpoint, but even things like how we build content, how we measure things. And it's in some ways it's really lowering the bar for content standards, in my opinion. You know, there's a lot of tools out there. Everybody kind of knows of Synthesia and things like that. And it that gets back to what I said earlier about being good enough. You know, there was a point in time when in L&D recording videos and on in-field kind of like real action kind of stuff was really important, high polished stuff. And then TikTok sort of came out and said, hey, but yeah, maybe we could just do it with a iPhone and, you know, it'll be good enough and it will look more natural and more real. And we embrace that. And now AI is creating videos for us. And so there's sort of this disruptive, no matter how you look at it, very disruptive shift that's happening with that. And not all of it's bad, but some of it is really, really concerning. And the way that I think of it is, it reminds me, and I'm old enough to say this, I remember when we got our first microwave, and my mother did not want to embrace the microwave at all because it felt like the cheap way of cooking, if that makes sense. Yeah. And AI can certainly have that tint to it, right? But on a very positive side, it can also really speed up processes. It can help with the personalized learning experiences. It can help to cut through the clutter and make searching for things easier. I mean, there's so many positive things that are there. So it is, unfortunately, the biggest topic. It will likely not be a couple of years from now. We'll probably have a new one to talk about. But for right now, the number one challenge that I see happening is staying up with how fast it's changing. It's every conference I'll go to, someone will introduce a new tool to me.
Great.
They'll show me something else. They'll say, did you ever do this? Have you tried this? Yeah. Oh, I've cut costs here. And I'm like, wow. And some of those decisions are great. And then some of them may have long-term impacts that are not so great. And I think we're still figuring it out.
Dave, on a Monday, you've just learned this new company that is like at the forefront of L&D AI tech. And then by Friday, they're antiquated and there's a brand new company that you have to learn all about.
They're out of business and the new one comes in. Yeah.
Literally just like moving at the speed of light. And you know, one thing that I would say that I think there could be potential for AI being really great is scaling learning. You know, when we look at some of the most effective ways to deliver learning is in role play or on the job training. And when you look at the capabilities of AI to be able to scale that out to more and more colleagues, like those are things about AI that excite me. But like you were saying, I too worry about the quality of the content. And when we think about quality of content and how that impacts the overall learner experience, and then their retention of that content, is that really where we want to be sacrificing quality?
Exactly. Yeah, the fastest path to mediocre content is AI right now.
That's fair.
And it's a slippery kind of place to be. So yeah, with all new things though, it's keeping up with it. I really do love meeting people, talking to people, going to conferences, listening, obviously podcasts, things like that, because you can keep up. It does get to be a bit overwhelming at times. And so I have to put it down and just be like, all right, you know, give me a pen and a paper and I'm going to be happy for a while.
It's wildly fascinating, but I think that this also goes back to what we were saying earlier about those learning libraries that have too much content. So you're like, wait, where do I go? Where do I start? What do I need to know? That's how I feel about AI. It is a massive learning library with no direction of where I should start or what is most important, because that changes every day. So like the learning library that is the world of AI is just wildly confusing and yes, overwhelming, but there are gems within that space that provide so much value.
In our world, right, being the localization world, the only parallel that I can draw to the last time something was so disruptive, again, in our world specifically, was when machine translation, statistical machine translation years ago came out into the market. And it was like, that's it. Our industry is done. Now, again, shameless plug, although I think it's my job to do that on this podcast, RWS pioneered the development of statistical and then neural machine translation. So we've been kind of ahead of the game for a long time and patented a bunch of the technology that, you know, you see in use today. But again, back then it was like, that's it. Our industry's done. Everyone's going to use machine translation. And slowly but surely what happened was it was leveraged as a productivity tool more than anything else at the time. And we were able to churn out more translations faster as content was growing without necessarily having a huge impact to our customers' budgets. So I think the biggest difference today with AI, right, because again, that's the parallel that we can draw to how it's impacting our industry, is that senior leadership within a lot of our clients, target accounts, they're the ones that are mandating now, okay, now you have to plug AI into every process. And what's the first one that we can bring down to a zero cost? Unfortunately, translation is the first idea that comes to mind, because in theory, you could go into ChatGPT right now and say, hey, you know, translate this for me and you'll get an output. Obviously, there are so many different intricacies to how you leverage AI, how we leverage AI today within our process to, again, be more productive and provide more at scale for our customers. But I think this is a good opportunity to kind of segue into kind of the last comments as we close out this conversation. If we were to give one piece of advice for people dealing with creating content and getting it out into the global market today, what would it be? And I'll start. I would say that if you're talking from our side, from localization, if you are out there trying to find a partner for localization and they are trying to convince you that you can do a full AI translation solution, run as fast as you can. Conversely, if you're talking to a partner that says you absolutely cannot use any kind of AI or machine translation, it is not suitable for your content, run as fast as you can. Because a responsible partner is going to understand how to leverage a more hybrid approach so that you can get the best of both worlds. Because they're right, not all content is suitable for it yet, but a lot of the content is. And so finding the right partner that could really responsibly embrace that technology and educate those stakeholders, I think is the one bit of advice that I would give from our side of the content lifecycle.
That's good advice.
What about you?
My thought, Lenny, on that is we are in a people business and you got to know the people. So over invest in the time that it takes to get to know who they are and what makes them tick. What sacred things are there that you might step on, and make sure you take it seriously. Because I think assuming that you can build one size fits all is always a mistake. And I think that it's really important that you recognize that we are truly here for them. You know, we're here to make their jobs easier and their life easier. It isn't about us trying to push the way we do things on them. It's quite the opposite. So, yeah, people business, get to know the people.
Amen. All right, Christopher, close us out.
I could offer a lot of different points of advice in terms of content creation, but I think that the one thing that I have learned and that I hold really sacred is the importance of inclusion, bringing in voices to the table, and not just filling seats at the table, but giving voices to those sitting at the table to really drive creativity and innovation around the content. to make sure that you're hearing the voices of the field. So you're building content for the field, by the field, Amen. Regardless of your industry. And then just really engaging stakeholders and making sure that you have their buy-in to what it is that you're doing and that you understand how you're measuring it and showing the performance of that program. The more inclusive you are as you're building out your training, the more success you're going to see after that training is rolled out to its audience. I think that inclusion for me is just my North Star. I always want to make sure that I am including as many people in these projects that we're doing as possible. I mean, we've released a global proprietary sales training program for thousands and thousands of employees. So I think that that's pretty impressive.
That's pretty impressive.
That is pretty impressive. Awesome. Yeah. All right, gentlemen, thank you so much. Always a pleasure.
Lenny, thank you.
I'm looking forward to the next time we get together.